Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Lyra Van Cleef Stefanin. Lyra Van Cleef Stefanin is assistant professor of English at Cornell University. She is the author of the poetry collection Black Swan, winner of the 2001 Cave Canem Poetry Prize, and co-author with Elizabeth Alexander of the chapbook Poems in Conversation and a Conversation. Her poems have appeared in African American Review, Callaloo, Crab Orchard Review, Rattapalax, Shenandoah, and in several anthologies, including Bum Rush the Page and Roll Call. Her new book, published by the University of Pittsburgh Press, is entitled Open Interval. Hi, Lyra. How are you?
Hi, Dan. I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm happy to have you here and happy that you're in Pittsburgh. So you're going to start with a poem from your new book.
That's right. Right.
Okay.
So this is the first poem from Open Interval, Bop, the North Star, Auburn, New York. Polaris sits still in the sky, and if I knew which one it was, I could follow it all the way to Auburn. Oh, Harriet, who did not need the poise of freedom knocked into your head like sense, who found it more than possible to sleep, pistol shoved deep into your pocket along this route, I cannot tell a dipper from Orion. Yes, the springtime needed you. Many a star was waiting for your eyes only. The university twinkles on the hill above my house. The fat moon rises and a girl holds out her arms. She twirls in a blue Polly Flinders dress, Mama's precious cameo, a white woman's silhouette on black satin ribbon, choker tied around her neck. Poise begins here, in cinders, in rhyme, in splintering beauty into this and this, the image at my throat, the summer's pitching constellations, the 10 o'clock scholar's midnight lesson. Yes, the springtime needed you. Many a star was waiting for your eyes only. At the prison at Auburn, I cross the yard. Inmates wet tongues against my body, cement sculpted, poised for hate, pitch compliments like coins, weighed their silver slickening in the water, uncollected change. A guard asks, think they're beautiful? Just wait till they're out here stabbing each other. Oh, Harriet, the stars throw down shanks. Teach the sonnets a cell. Now try to escape. Yes, the springtime needed you. Many a star was waiting for your eyes only. This is Dear John. A woman writes a letter. One need read no further. Your name, the site to which she won't return. I heard mark used for mock when I was young. Old men sang quit marking me like birds. Swan, eagle, vulture, the summer triangle. This was the south, this is the north, and I am, and I was, astronomical parlance. Lyra, I took to textbooks. I will leave here too, but I digress. Take you, for example. This next poem is called Lost. Lost. The river, unrolled bolt of silk, gives evening the smell of fish, wet leaves, loosening matter. We glide through its blue plum tint towards night, the leftover tang of red wine in our mouths. Upstream, an idea waits for us. If we were lost, how much more would we love each other? We four move towards this losing with the steady creak and drip of our rowing. We cannot in lowering darkness tell direction, whether the frog's croak came from behind or before us. our bellies full. The swamp beckons us behind its green drapery. Whatever hides in the tangle, the surprise of cypress knees, the fierce, sharp-edged palms welting our forearms as we walk blind through mottled nights, sulfur rot, and sucking mud. What flies into our mouths, impossible to see. Mosquitoes lighting in our ears, their constant whine, high-pitched and crazy-making. The silent patience of gators and our wary estimation of their hunger. We will keep, we are certain, as we lose ourselves for hours, when we find ourselves again, bankside, and two must choose to swim because we're not where we began. The river moves, despite our stillness, our breath breathing itself into the wet heat. Whether they disappear for good, the two who splash away, their heavy kicking swallowed by this evening. I am of the two who wait, waist high in water, eyes stretched wide to see nothing but night washing itself, black over black, in muggy layers, inches from my face. Not my hands, skin of water, curve of meniscus, my breasts where I displace it, my undissolved legs immersed, merged with water, losing above, in, out of, but for these hands sliding over me, another's hands to keep me from becoming current tongue, lisp of leaf tips touching water, but for we two touching, agreeing, this is my body, agreeing I still belong in it. This is R.R. Lyre, Will. When I am dead, I may not remember the mess of purple irises in the neighbor's garden or the way I leaned against their fence to look at him. Lost to rot, the body and the soul, this is not the time nor the place. I will die when it's no longer possible for this body to show itself best. It makes me sad, the things I wanted. Love's gorgeous force, a tight fat cloud of blue, hydrangea, someone coaxed the soil to color, the universe, cancer of the hallelujah. My name in his mouth, an arrogance of vapor, a star, diminished, sucked down into paper.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Lyre Van Cleef Stefanin. She's reading from her new book, Open Interval. Lyre, I wanted to ask about your, what seems to me like an evocation of story, but not quite story in your poems, that, you know, there'll be certainly like pieces of narrative in the poems and moments where as a listener we can plug in a clear way, and then the poem seems to travel to other moments where we're not sure exactly where we are, but yet things are evoked. Can you talk about putting together poems that do that?
Sure. I think I'm not necessarily in love with narrative, and I like or not necessarily a narrative that follows in a way that makes sense on the outset. I like the idea of being delivered up somewhere by the end of the poem and kind of looking around and thinking, well, how did I get here? where did this come from? And because I think that's more like the way life is. You know, you start out at the story and if you know how it's going to end at the beginning, that's dull.
right. But so, surely not all narratives you would know how it's going to end.
No. But I like strangeness, the possibility of another story overtaking the story that you began with, and of of, yeah, like it's of finding yourself somewhere unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself somewhere unexpected when you're writing your poems?
I do. Often, because of the way that my mind works, where I don't have ADHD or anything like that, but I wonder sometimes about my ability to just follow one thread. I think of myself, I'm a bit of a straggler or a wanderer, you know, someone like the poem Lost. I have a tendency to get lost.
Well, if you're not interested in following a thread, you know, that might be why you're not doing it. I mean,
or following a thread for as long as it holds my interest until something else catches my eye. And then I'm like, well, I wonder what's over here. But then it's kind of dangerous. You know, I wanted in that poem Lost to think about, well, if you do that, then you really can wind up in some situations where then you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of strange because I have the word thread written down here. Mm. And also, I have written down what connects us and what separates us, because I kept thinking about that when you were reading. You know, earlier you were talking about spaces and portals and ways to enter the poem and ways to enter experience. Mm. Can you talk a little bit about your obsession with space?
Yes, yes. I was talking earlier about the reason why the poem, the book begins with Bop the North Star, because I teach poetry workshops in a maximum security men's prison in Auburn, New York, which is an hour from Ithaca. And Auburn, New York is the town where Harriet Tubman settled after her trips back and forth on the Underground Railroad. And so when I drive to the prison, I have to drive past Harriet Tubman's house to get to the prison. And it really started making me think about the question of how far is it to freedom exactly? You know, if you get this far away from the state that you're trying to escape from, is that where freedom is? Because there I am, you know, with this giant prison in the place where this was the destination, you know, this is where freedom was located. And the sometimes I find it really difficult to locate anything. Again, I guess being a wanderer and a straggler, that would make sense. And so I started really thinking about space and kind of looking around and trying to figure out, okay, well, where am I? And is this freedom? Is this the space in which it's located? And then I started thinking about all matter being made mostly of space, and the space in the body, and the distances between, you know, one body and another, one concept and another, and all of that. And so following those.
Okay, why don't you read more poems?
Right. So I'll read a poem from the second section of the book. This is called Penelope, which I couldn't resist. Living in Ithaca, I had to write a Penelope poem. Penelope. Tropical depression. The sky finds the right number and the tiny hammer in you drops, subtler than a click, as in a clock or combination lock, as the L in salt, a falling, a pulling down, and in, you are stitched to the body, here, the Atlantic, a lust, the wet slap on black streets translates, even this storm, somatic, pulled up from the south, pushed off the edge of a northern coast and into itself as rain. All day the blue truth loosen you, unwinds this hurricane. Dear John, winking demon, you are 18 in November 1782. Watching the sky as ever, master of a perfect silence, the first night you note the change and understand. You belong to her, and you will lie stock still on the rooftop, December to May to learn her. You do not know the sound of your own name, the shape of hers in your mouth. You are patient for what she will teach each evening she gives you, so little it seems almost less. Tensed for the sensation, you fear. This must be hearing. She turns your whole body to an ear. Each morning you wake stiff with listening. This next poem is called Ink. It has an epigraph from the Bible, Philippians 4:11, which reads, "For I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content." Ink. Looking at the inside of my wrist, I see the tattoo I am told I cannot get. A new shade of absence inked across an old scar. Sakura blossom, this snippet of scripture I want to flip into my psyche daily with 500 quick flicks, like checking a watch, a tick, to claim a word, content. I'm willing to bear the needle to mar my skin with permanence the artist regrets, will too soon muddy, like looking at a painting through a tinted window. So colored, girls may love color, but my skin can't hold this vibrancy, converts it instead to its own, further darkening. Body Worlds 2, X-Lady. Her name moves away from her as if, without the body, it could see the monster it is. Over there, hung up like desire, like art on the wall, a black-barred peep show called consent. A form has been filled out, but in whose hand? If the glove does not fit, you must forget that, your own middle name's Nicole. I remember how hard it was to pull myself back in by degrees, quickly, like yanking up office blinds, like the sound that makes accordioned a ripple, like a countdown to blast off, like coming, but this is the violent opposite of that. Gender is monstrous. Her appellation, lady, but who wants to sing this song again? In from where I was, almost asleep, floating outside my body, but not even a German pseudoscientist can find the space to which I returned. I turned a corner, and this is what I saw.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Lyra Van Cleef Stefanin. She's reading from her new book, Open Interval, just published by the University of Pittsburgh Press. There's a painting on the cover of your book by Romare Bearden, and I know that you love his work. Could you talk about, and I keep asking you about space and sound and visual, but it's so all through your work. Can you talk about your relationship to the visual in terms of painting and more, if you want?
Yes, I get a lot of inspiration from visual work, and so I wind up writing a lot of ekphrastic poems. The poem on the cover is Romare Bearden's Falling Star, 1979, which I think is kind of amazing because I think he manages to do so much of what I'm trying to do with this visual piece that it takes me, you know, 80 pages worth of poems to try to accomplish. There are a couple of poems in the book based on Bearden's work, both of which are titled Reclining Nude, circa 1977, Romare Bearden. And that piece is a collage, a piece that he did. It's a nude black woman as a collage. And the thing that was so interesting to me about it is the way that the face in the collage is split to reveal this blue beneath the surface of the exterior of this black woman's body. And it was so kind of suggestive of this depth and this identity beneath identity and a possibility and of space and what's kind of hidden in it that I had to write about them.
Well, you know, you're talking about collage, and mm-hmm. You know, when I think of collage, maybe I'm thinking of it in a limited way in terms of poetry, but I think of, you know, things sort of up against things and crossing over things, and there is some crossing over, the sense of crossed over imagery in your work, but in your work I feel I do feel a lot of more emergent, and you know, things like you said, underneath things coming up from beneath, things going in. And would you say that there's a sense of collage in your writing or no?
Definitely so. And I think it comes out a lot in the R.R. Lyrae sonnets that are in the book. And that R.R. Lyrae designation of those stars, R.R. Lyrae stars are pulsating variable stars, and they brighten and dim as they expand and contract. And astronomers use them for calculating distances. And the R.R. designation is interesting to me because it makes me think of railroad crossings and of X marked sites of intersection and blues and that kind of thing. And so their places, those sonnets are places in the book, but the rest of the poems are too, where that sense of overlap is something that I'm really trying to mm-hmm. get at, of like, this is a site in which these different pieces are coming together. And so I guess that's kind of collage-like.
Mm-hmm. Could you read one of those?
Mm-hmm. R.R. Lyrae, Supernova. It has an epigraph by Jimi Hendrix, and it just says, eventually. Jimi Hendrix, R.R. Lyrae, Supernova. You love this opening riff as much as I, my emptiness, like that of a guitar, an instrumental hollow. In the sky, where else? Diminishings in art, the star explodes toward invisibility. I thought my life was over and my heart was broken. Then I moved to Cambridge. We explode like this, and Jimmy plays the hurt backward over itself. The ocean gave its miracles. He sings, it is enough. We watched a documentary, one wave, millennial at Chupo. Rose, god-awful, and blue, we saw ourselves, fluid, aloof, whole notes listing away from wedded, lawful. I guess I should say that in that poem, there's a line from a Louise Glick poem that kind of emerges into the poem in the middle of there. And so part of the thing that happens in the poem is the other poems are peeking through and reveal themselves. Kind of, I wanted to think about and talk about the palimpsest nature of poetry when
okay.
I was doing these.
I like that sense that's in there of something, maybe that's what I was talking about with emerging, something coming up through, maybe peeking through, but another voice or another whole world coming through.
Right.
Okay. We have time for a couple more.
All right. So I'll read another poem where Jimi Hendrix makes an appearance. He showed up a lot in this book. This is The Ends of Praise, and it has an epigraph from Joseph Brodsky, who writes, "And what is space anyway, if not the body's absence at every given point?" The Ends of Praise. In the consuming dark, we cannot tell ourselves from ghosts. we are skinless voices. One says, a woman made something, beautiful, fall. Another says, slip, leaves into an envelope. In concert, we sound the richest black vein through each other. A disconcerting chord, a thick, fat, rising Hendrix haunted, his guitar for the ends of praise, the wheeze of wind through silk distortions, a screaming eagle's memory of midnight flares from the dark's moored barges. We locate ourselves hurting for longitude. We sink the knife in powder of sympathy and listen to the dogs as they howl. This is Tandem. You can be in it and never reach it, the sky. I have been falling for a moment, standing, one snatched second yanked beneath a parachute's violent blossoming. The sky had no color. I could not touch it. It held out blue as though to hold me, then fell away at the last second. I fell right through, right down to earth, right down to the drop zone, to the circle of pea gravel where I unbuckled myself from a man and stood on my own shaking legs.
We have time for one more.
Transit of Venus. The actors mill about the party saying rhubarb because other words do not sound like conversation. In the kitchen, always one who's just discovered beauty, his mouth full of whiskey and strawberries. He practices the texture of her hair with his tongue. In her, 5 billion electrons pop their atoms. Rhubarb in electromagnetic loops. Rhubarb, rhubarb. The din increases.
It's the poetry of Lyra Van Cleef Stefanin. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.